Welcome to PPM Simplifies. This is a weekly podcast that will help you have a better understanding on environmental regulations and how they relate to your industry. In each episode, we'll talk with experts across various industries who will share their insights with you. This is PPM Simplifies. Hello, this is Todd Perry with PPM Simplifies. Welcome to our show. Our podcast today, we have a lot of fun with it. We've got one of our principals out of our Birmingham, Alabama office. Michael Ellison is going to join us. Michael's an engineer and has a long career in the environmental space. He can handle it all, but today we're going to focus on underground storage tanks and some of the tricks to compliance and best practices. Michael, top of the day to you. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Todd. I appreciate you having me today. Looking forward to our discussion. Maybe we can come up with something that's a little informative for folks.
Yeah, I hope our audience enjoys it, and I think they will. You know, underground storage tanks, they exist in everyone's life. We all have to have gasoline to power our vehicles, to get around. The convenience stores, a great place to stop and, you know, grab a snack, fuel up your vehicle, quench your thirst. They're not on every corner, but boy, it sure seems like it, and especially in some developed areas. So way back, this may have been before you were born, I'm being facetious, in 1988, EPA started the process and they proposed environmental regulations on underground storage tanks. And so you had all these owners that had, at that point, there were probably three times as many underground storage tanks in the world. But because of the regulations and trying to be protective of human health and the environment, EPA introduced a suite of regulations. And Michael, what was that like for that first 10 years? There was a 98 deadline on upgrading all these underground storage tank facilities. If you put in new tanks, they had to meet new standards. What was that like for the regulated universe when that happened?
You know, we both lived through that. It was pretty hectic. You know, a lot of things were not clear. Some folks were eager to get going and got a head start on that, and others kind of waited to the last minute. So there was a lot of moving parts all crammed in there, trying to get everything in line where it would need to be. I'll ask you a quick question back. Do you know who the first state program was that received EPA approval?
Well, you know, I'm going to take a wild guess, and I'm going to guess, because I know you love the University of Alabama Crimson Tide, I'm going to say Alabama was the first state.
Well, you're close. It was our neighbor in Mississippi.
Oh, wow. That's right. Mississippi. How about that?
1990.
Very cool. They've been a leader. They've been on point.
That's right. They have.
So, you had all this, new regulations, and there were three major buckets: leak detection, overfill spill, and cathode protection. And there were a lot of crazy ideas at first. That there were, guys said, well, I don't want to dig my tanks out of the ground, so I'll cut a hole and I'll go in and I'll line them.
That's right.
In theory, that worked, but in practice, the results really weren't that good. I don't know if it was materials. In addition to that, we knew that steel lines were subject to cathode protection, and we know most leaks come from overfills, from line failures. And so flexible pipe came into vogue. And it turned out some of the materials on the inner walls were compatible with gasoline, but on the outer walls, they weren't compatible with gasoline. So if the system failed, it really quickly got out of hand.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there was a lot of problems that generated out of some of these upgrades that were taken into effect. And this is going to be a little bit from memory, so it could be off a little bit. But, sometime in 1995, I think that was the peak of UST cleanup efforts. There was a shade under 200,000 releases that were ongoing assessment and cleanup at that time. So all of these upgrades resulted in the discovery of a lot of releases and a lot of issues. And, that kind of proved the point to why some things needed to be done a little differently, just to make sure that, we're taking care of our inventory, but we're also not making a negative impact on the environment there.
That's right. And so you had UST owners now, post 1998, They had leak detection. They were testing their tanks and lines and UST system. They were putting in spill containments and sumps to protect from overfills and spills under the dispensers. They had overfill valves to allow, you know, tanks not to overflow and spew out of the vent lines. And so you fast forward, we're all comfortable with that. The deadline's 1998. People are up to speed and they exist, but EPA said, okay, now it's time to step up to the next level. And then the Energy Act of 2005 was passed, and the Energy Act had a lot. It touched on all aspects of energy, including underground storage tanks. What were some of the big things that came out of the 2005 Energy Act?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, there's a laundry list of things to discuss. You know, inspections. You know, there had to be more inspections completed by the owner operators. Operator training, that was a big push to have. You know, the three levels of operator training, the AB, a lot more in depth with the training, and the C level folks, basically the ones that would respond to a release. Secondary containment all over the place. They put renewed emphasis on financial responsibility. A lot of emphasis on cleanup of releases with fuel additives, primarily MTBE. And then as they moved away from those additives, well, the biofuel comes into play. So they put some strict guidance down on compatibility, making sure that the fuel that you're putting in the older systems is compatible, you know, throughout, you know, from the tank all the way to the dispenser, to prevent any corrosion or any issues with the fuel train there. So, you know, at that time, that also kicked in any new or replaced USTs and piping. They all had to be double walled with interstitial monitoring for leak detection. You kicked in spill bucket testing, had to be done once every 3 years, or if it was installed new, it had to be tested then before it could be put into use. Annual sump sensor test if you're using a sensor for interstitial monitoring. UDCs, under dispenser containment, and SDP sumps inspected annually. Any repair had to be made promptly, and a renewed emphasis on keeping water out of containment sumps. And gosh, we know how big of a problem that is depending on where you're at. It's just a constant battle at times, try to keep those sumps dry. So that's a handful of them. We could talk more, but those are the bigger items that came out of that.
You know, thinking about operator training, and that to me, that was really a concept, you know, building on leak detection or spill overfill protection. I get that. And that's important and that's good. But operator training said, hey, let's make sure the people that are around these underground storage tank systems, you know, it's not, I mean, of course it's a job, but they've got a little more familiarity with a UST system, how it operates and what to do if it gets into trouble. Man, are there any, what's your recommendation to make sure you're implementing that requirement, any life hacks on that?
Yeah, I think the main thing is just first you have to understand what you're supposed to do. And each UST system, you know, it's not necessarily one size fits all on what you're having to do. It depends on your components, the age of the system, and how it's being used. You know, the 30-day walkthrough inspections, you know, those are fairly simple. They're fairly easy. And you're kind of looking at your spill containment equipment and your release detection equipment. So at least once a month, you've got to pay attention to that. And then you have an annual walkthrough inspection that you have to do. It's a little more detailed. You're looking at a few more items. And then depending on your system, there's other annual tests or tests every 3 years that you need to do. So what we always recommend to folks is, you know, let's take a look at what you have. Let's see what your requirements are and just make like a little compliance calendar. It could be something on a whiteboard that you keep at the back of the store. It could be something more formal where your staff can access it, you know, on the internet or whatever, but just make sure you adhere to those guidelines. And the main thing is folks being aware, hey, something fishy is going on. I need to take a look at it. Maybe my inventory's off a little bit, or I keep getting this alarm. I'm super busy. Don't silence the alarm. You know, try to figure out what's going on. So just understanding what you're supposed to do and making that commitment to do it. And what we found and what we see a lot of our clients doing is just having a quick reference chart for those that are responsible of, hey, I got 2 days left to get this done. I need to get this knocked out. Or I've got a 3-year spill bucket test coming up. I'm not going to wait to the last week. I'm going to ahead and schedule that a little early, and I move my date up for the next 3 years.
So you segue us perfectly. So we come, you know, we had the 1988 initial rule proposal, the 1998 deadline, the 2005 Energy Act, which was pretty well adopted, you know, by 2008 universally. Then you had a number of states that began to create requirements that EPA liked to see those best practices. You talked about a couple of them already, but they rolled into the rule, the 2015 UST rule. We saw it, and, you know, came out in the course in 2015. There were 3 years of negotiations and comments from all the affected parties, equipment manufacturers, UST owners, regulators, and then approved states like Louisiana, Alabama, they have until this year, 2021, to adopt it. So you have a lot of states are adopting these, and it really steps up. You touched on the monthly walkthroughs. You touched on the annual inspections. There's, you know, testing of the sumps and the spills. So, you know, to run a UST system, if you think about 1988 to today, man, it's just infinitely more sophisticated and intricate. But those, you know, the work you're going through, what it does is it helps ensure that you don't have releases. Now, releases still occur, but you can look at the annual release number. EPA puts out a quarterly report. You know, if you look at it maybe every 3 to 5 years, the trend is a downward trend. And Michael, from your experience, I guess that's probably the fruit of the rules, is to try to minimize those releases.
That's exactly right, Todd. That's the whole purpose there. And it benefits everybody. You know, you obviously want to maintain your system in compliance. You want to be a good neighbor to those around you. And these rules just kind of force you in that direction to, you know, you got more hands on, more eyes looking at it, more things that need to be done, trying to catch a potential problem before it develops. I mean, that's how we always want to do it. You know, we don't want to be reactionary. We want to be prepared. And okay, this is something I need to look into because something's not right. You know, we've all had terrible experiences where something goes wrong and it's Katie barred the door. You've got to get a release cleaned up. You know, we don't want to see that happen. And your numbers that you were referencing proves that out. You know, the more you look at it, the more you test, even these simple walkthrough inspections, you know, you referenced the spill bucket earlier. That's one of the most common places that a release occurs, and it may not be significant all at once, but if you lose 5-10 gallons 2 or 3 times a month, before you know it, you've got an issue with the groundwater or with the soil. And then you got folks like us out there drilling holes in the ground and sampling groundwater, you know?
That's right. Disrupting the business. So, and I think another thing, Michael, is, you know, a lot of people just by nature, they'll look at it and they'll look at all these requirements independently and kind of think through, how can I comply with that? A lot of times when you're doing your leak detection, you're testing your lines or your tanks on an annual basis, you can tie some of these other requirements like testing of spill buckets and sumps and annual inspections. You can tie those activities together, can't you?
That's exactly right. And that's what most people will try to do, as opposed to, you know, dividing everything up independent. You know, if I can knock out 2 or 3 things at one time, that's what you're going to do to try to manage that better. And, you know, some of our clients, you know, they handle all this stuff in house, your, you know, monthly walkthroughs, annual walkthroughs, and others have chosen to, okay, we're going to get somebody else to do this. We don't have the manpower to take care of it. So there's different ways to skin the cat. And then there's some things that you're just going to have to get somebody else to do. If it's specialized testing, you know, you're going to hire a contractor to come take care of that for you. And you just get that on the schedule. You know, it just becomes something. It's kind of like going to the doctor for a checkup. You know, once a year, you want to go to get a good checkup, make yourself a reminder, make sure it gets done.
Well, and that's right. And, you know, any regulations can look a little onerous, but once you really dig in and think them through and organize them, one, they'll do their intended purpose and help you prevent releases and be protective of drinking water and the environment and human health. And the other thing of it is, you know, would you rather spend, I think an estimate I've seen from EPA is all in, UST compliance is about $1,000 a month for underground storage tank is a rough cost.
Yeah. I've seen that.
Versus, If I have, you know, a 10,000 gallon release at $3 a gallon gasoline, that's $30,000. And so that pays for, you know, a few years of UST compliance.
That's right.
And well, Michael, man, this has been great. There's a lot of things to drill into, and hopefully you'll come back to do some future podcasts with me. We can talk specifically about some of the main areas of UST compliance. But I hope our audience enjoyed this big overview that we've been able to kind of walk through, a little history lesson and some of the main components. Michael, is there anything you want to add or close as we start wrapping this podcast up?
No, Todd, I think we got it covered, and I look forward to the next time we can get back together and talk a little UST.
Well, Michael, thanks so much for joining us today. Again, this is Todd Perry. I'm your host for PPM Simplifies. Oh, one more thing. If you have some questions or want to reach out to us about any of the things we discussed on today's podcast, you can find us and contact us through our website at ppmco.com. Thanks for tuning in, and look forward to you for the next episode. Thanks. Thank you for finding our podcast. For more information, be sure to visit our website at ppmco.com. To stay updated on new episodes, feel free to subscribe to PPM Simplifies on your podcast app of choice. Until next time, this is PPM Simplifies.